Well, welcome back to the Building Manager podcast, proudly recorded through Anchor by Spotify. These podcasts are available on Spotify, Anchor.fm, Google and Apple, to name a few. Well, on this particular podcast this week, I welcome one of the director and principal consultants at Allen and Hurst Risk. James Allen kindly joins me to discuss workplace health and safety across Australia and a little bit across the ditch in New Zealand. James comes with a wealth of knowledge and experience within the workplace health and safety sectors, and it's quite warming to hear the insights that James has, and I sure hope that you get as much out of this particular podcast as I did listening to James. That's enough for me right now, so I'll see you on the other side. Well, welcome, James Allen, the Director and Principal Consultant at Allen and Hurst Risk. James and his fellow director, Owen Hurst, are national experts in workplace health and safety. So welcome to the Building Manager podcast.
Thanks, Matt, for having me on.
No problems at all. James, would you just mind sharing a little with our listeners about your work history and how you started Allen and Hurst Risk?
No worries. So really just started off, nearly a decade now in work health and safety. So I did at uni a grad diploma in OHS with a Bachelor of Business that tied in pretty well. From there, I really started off with, you know, sort of low-level sort of roles as a safety administrator in sports complexes. And then, yeah, moved down to Canberra from Brisbane. I was from Brisbane originally. Moved down to cold Canberra for a government agency called Comcare. And basically Comcare is the, the Commonwealth insurer and regulator. So that was a really good experience. That's where I met Owen, my business partner now.
Yep.
From there, I moved to Sydney. There's a lot of work opportunities in Sydney a couple of years ago with a lot of the infrastructure projects going on here. So worked for like a tier one company, then moved around a little bit in terms of other construction companies, such as RFI Technology Solutions, IntelliHub, those sort of places. Mm. That gave me some really good experience there. And so what sort of perked my interest there was, I guess, the contractors we were engaging sort of developed a passion for helping small businesses understand their work health safety obligations and also just to help them build up their systems as well. So I had the idea to sort of go into business initially just to sell safety systems or swims online.
Yep.
Where people could just, well, these small businesses could get these systems at a reasonable price. And what we found was that once people had, or those businesses had those systems or swims, they didn't know how to really implement them for their business. So that sort of brought in the consulting side. And then we sort of now really focus on ISO certification, which is, you know, the international standard organization. A lot of government organizations and larger commercial companies ask for these companies to have ISO certification. It basically shows them that, you know, they're taking safety seriously or the environment quality seriously, and that they're externally certified to this standard. So we help small businesses acquire ISO certification so they basically win more work. So
Right. That's
sort of where we're at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice work. You mentioned swims there, and, you know, I could really visualize, you know, the 10 years ago, maybe even 12 years ago, even longer, where you might have a swims and it just sit in the cupboard. And I'm just so pleased to see that things really have changed over such a long period of time. And I guess it's about time it did say, because they were just so important, but just so regularly ignored.
That's right. Yeah, you're spot on there. I actually had a, for one of my clients, we got Safe Work New South Wales had to give a bit of a talk.
Yeah, right.
And one of the talks they were giving on was about swims, and their real position on swims is that they need to be short and sweet.
Yep.
So literally just have hazard controls of the high risk tasks, talked about in the work health safety regulations.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really on, they're basically saying, look, swims should be max 2 to 3 pages. They shouldn't be this 20 to 30 page document that just people just aren't going to read it.
It's crazy.
That's why they sit on the shelf.
Yeah.
Why would you read it? So having a swims document that is just focused on those high risk tasks and 2 to 3 pages probably about right, depending on, you know, the work activities.
Yep.
That seems to be a sweet spot, and that's definitely what I would recommend to businesses developing swims or basically acquiring swims from their subcontractors where needed.
No, that's good. Now, James, there was a National Workplace Health and Safety Harmonisation released, 10 years ago now, I guess. How do you think this was received across Australia, and could the release of the harmonisation been more effective?
Oh, dude, that's a hard question.
Yeah. What I'll just add into that is that I understand New Zealand took on some of this harmonisation as well. So it's all right. Go on.
Yeah, I mean, my background's not a work health safety lawyer or architect of those laws, but I guess from a practitioner side, but when I was working in some of those companies, they were across borders. So it was like national companies, you know. So I was taking care of operations in, you know, Queensland, South Wales, or South Australia, Victoria,
right,
and different states and territories. And the real advantage of the harmonisation when they came into place was that the work health safety laws were based on these model laws that Safe Work Australia came up with.
Yep.
So, you know, the jurisdictions being, you know, the states and territories had to adopt those laws. And the advantage of that is that you're working with basically one piece of legislation across all your operations. So up to the point now, I think WA has just come on board. I think Victoria is the only one that's not signed up to those model laws, basically because those model laws were essentially, a lot of it is based on the Victorian system anyway, so why would you change? but you're right in the fact that, New Zealand just brought on some model laws, albeit with a few minor changes to suit their context.
Yep.
But look, that just makes it easier for employers. A lot of Australian businesses do business in New Zealand as well.
Absolutely.
So, advantage with having, I guess, those national laws is that, you know, across borders, maybe state, territory, or international in New Zealand, it's all the same. And also, the Australian standard for safety systems is Australia and New Zealand standard. So that's already the same as well. And that was updated in 2018. So more the same, the better, because we are very similar in terms of, you know, other laws that we have as well. So yeah, it just works out a lot better. In terms of how could it be done better, geez, I'm not too sure. I think creating these sort of schemes is extremely difficult.
Lengthy process.
It requires a lot of consultation as well. But look, I think, what is it now, 10 years on, I think it's worked very well.
Well, that's positive to hear.
There's
a reference in the Legislation and Act regarding, you know, this term of a PCBU. And I'm really discovering now as a committee member, I guess, and in my background of building management and consultation and so forth. And for those that don't know, person conducting a business or undertaking, I come across a lot of instances where building managers, caretakers, and committees have no understanding of their roles when it comes to a PCBU. Would you mind maybe just sharing how this PCBU is responsible within their environment?
Yeah, so the PCBU is obviously a new term from the previous work health safety legislation. And it's a bit, I wouldn't say convoluted, but it's a bit mixed in terms of what a strata title, what a corporate would be responsible for as a PCBU. So generally, if it's a strata, is only responsible for common areas if they're used for only residential purposes. But as soon as that strata or body corporate engages a worker, and a worker can be an employee or a contractor, health and safety legislation does apply. So it's this weird sort of mix where it doesn't until you actually engage someone to perform work. So, for example, I live in an apartment complex here. We have a really awesome caretaker, Pat. So he organises, you know, all the contractors that come on site. I see him in the hallways doing odd jobs all the time. So this building has engaged Pat to basically be that person on site. They've engaged him for it, they're paying a salary. So that strata body corporate building manager would have work health safety responsibilities to him.
Yep.
They're engaging him for work. So they would need to do certain things under the Work Health Safety Act to make sure that, you know, he has enough, you know, for example, he has access to PPE, he's aware of his health and safety risks and hazards in the workplace. They're doing their utmost to, you know, protect him in the workplace as well. But also, apart from Pat, but when contractors come on site, you know, if they're mowing a lawn, for example, then work health safety, you know, responsibilities then apply to that work area, so that lawn and what that contractor's doing. So it is a little bit convoluted in terms of, you know, when the duties of PCB do apply and when they don't apply, my best advice is, you know, if you're in that sort of situation, you're not sure, best to sort of talk to a work health safety lawyer and they can really point you in the right direction. But my general advice to if someone approaches me is just to take a risk management approach and I guess do your utmost for whoever's coming on site, maybe a contractor or, you know, volunteers or, you know, whatever it is. It's just to basically manage work health and safety effectively. And there's a few ways you can do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And every party has a responsibility acting as a PCBU, as you, I think you've just mentioned. So, yeah, building manager, committee, building owners, and of course the strata manager. So it's, I think, really just important that I know it's a bit convoluted and it has to be separated at some degree, because when a legal situation comes through, right, who are they going to sue, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's best just to take the precautionary principle and just risk manage. It's not that hard. 95% of the Work Health Safety Act and regs is effective risk management.
Yeah.
That's it. If you're doing that, then generally you're going to be, you know, compliant with the acts and regs, so to speak.
Absolutely. And I'll never forget my father telling me as a new building manager to say, you know, the manage by walking around. And
yeah, that's a good one.
The one thing that I had drilled into all of the people that I trained was one of the first things you get to do when you arrive into your building, outside of saying hello to your staff and letting them know where you're going, is to go and do your building walk.
I had a similar manager. I work at the sports complex. He was, I guess, the managing director of that sports complex, and he would every morning do a walk around.
Yep.
Just so that presence was felt as well from the staff on the floor, just to say that this is what I care about. This is like, you kept you on your toes as well.
Absolutely.
You know, the top dog from the office coming down, walking around, saying good day as well.
Yeah.
And some construction companies, there's a lot of high risk work there, like pre-start walks and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a real effective way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really see it in the same way that the captain, you know, walks onto the tarmac and looks under the plane and, you know, walks around his plane and so forth. And, you know, once again, I guess, you know, they're just taking responsibility, right? I've got to fly this beast. Let's have a look. I mean, they're probably no engineer, but I'm sure if they recognise something that was a bit out of place, you know, the plane wouldn't be going anywhere.
Yeah, I guess what you're talking about there is, I guess, physically what, you know, how you're managing safety and, you know, what you're doing to pick up hazards and, you know, having that general awareness. I think what I want to talk about just quickly is what systems you can use. So I'm a big fan of systems, systematically managing aspects of, you know, not only just safety, but other things as well.
Yep.
And one thing that I guess people can do if they're in that situation of PCBU is to have a few processes in place around risk management, but very importantly, contractor management as well. Contractor management's a massive risk for some people, some PCBUs. So my general advice around that is, you know, if you're engaging, say, a plumber or an electrician or some sort of trade, is to basically do what's called a contractor pre-evaluation. And what that does is you're doing your what's called due diligence, basically collect information about that contractor. You know, if he's a plumber or a spark, he's going to have a trade license. Maybe other tickets as well that you might need to collect in relation to that. You might need to collect his safe work weather statement or if a risk assessment or a safe operating procedure on the task that he's performing. And really what you're doing there is just acquiring information about how he's going to perform the work to assess if that work's going to be done safely and also if it's going to impact, you know, other operations at your building or, you know, the occupants as well. So really what you're doing there, that evaluation, is just it's proving that you're having a look at the, I guess, the safety hazards the contractor's going to bring into the building. From there, there's other processes you have as well, such as monitoring. You can do, you know, spot inspections of the contractor via inspection form. Other risk management procedures or processes in place. You know, you can have a risk register for all the tasks or hazards that might occur on your site through all the different operations, such as, you know, lawn maintenance. You know, if an electrician's coming in, a plumber's coming in, those sort of things. So, and that's what relates to like a work health safety plan as well. So, a work health safety plan generally relates to the construction industry, because if there's a, I know in New South Wales, if there's a you're a principal contractor and there's a job worth more than $250,000, it requires a work health safety management plan. But generally, like that's sort of been taken on in other industries as well. I've seen it, and you know, it's basically a way. It just explains how you're going to manage work health and safety on that site.
Yep.
It's sort of just a useful tool where it's a one-stop shop to say how things are managed in terms of safety.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of building management contracts worth more than $250,000 out there as well. So,
absolutely.
Building managers really listening today, and companies that are out there employing these people, you have a massive responsibility to provide your workplace health and safety management plan, if it's over, obviously, that specific amount. Yeah.
But also, it's just useful to have anyway, I think.
Absolutely.
In terms of a
backup,
is how you manage as a backup. This is how we manage safety, and yeah, it's just something to refer to and say this is how we do things. So if a new person comes on board or a new committee member, for example, I mean, this is bang. This is how we do it. Easy.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that Allen and Hurst Risk offer some really great services, and you breached on one before with the ISO certification, and of course. The CM3. Would you mind maybe just giving a brief overview of the ISO and how this can be important for building owners and assist to the building managers?
Sure. So generally, ISO certification, it's you know, like there's a standard for making a chair. There's a standard for test and tagging. There's Australian standards for everything. This one for ISO certification in terms of safety, it's ISO 45001. It relates to safety management systems. So this standard will say that you must have a OHS policy, and it must say these things. You must have a hazard identification process. So there's certain things in that standard that, you know, if you want to meet, you need to make a system or a set of documents that, you know, meets that standard.
Mm-hmm.
And generally companies use that in terms of in the commercial sphere to one, manage safety better, but also really importantly is to, I guess, set themselves out from their competitors. So if they're going for a tender, they're neck and neck with another company that's, you know, offering the same quality, same cost, usually that ISO certification is going to put the nose ahead for them. So in terms of like the building managers, it's probably not going to apply so much. I do know some of the larger ones, because I've got some clients, they fit out companies, so they do work for, you know, like JLL and these other massive companies.
Yeah, Colliers, etc.
Yeah, exactly. They require to do work for them to, you know, basically fit out in those premises, they need to have ISO. So it's a pre-qualification that I was talking about before to get onto site. But for smaller ones, not going to be required. It's just going to be, you know, you've got to think about the administrative burden of requiring someone to have ISO.
Right.
Because definitely for my client, you know, they engage in some pretty high risk work because they're doing fit out of a whole, you know, of a whole room or office space or, you know, building space. Therefore, you know, that building manager wants to know that they're going to do things safely, and that ISO is just an easy way to sort of say, we require you guys to have ISO certification if you want to work on our site. So,
yeah, I guess I sort of drew the building manager into it was because as a part of the startup process with these new builds, a building manager is generally employed reasonably early in the piece, and it's generally, I guess, sort of 6 months outside of PC. And I guess just having that handover with the developers and builders is just so important. And having the knowledge, I guess, that the building manager can feel reasonably safe, you know, knowing that there's an ISO in place and, you know, they can refer to that documentation as I say, a part of the handover. You know, and basically put all the pressure back onto the builders and developers and so forth and say, hey, look, you guys, you know, have this ISO, and according to this part, you're not really sort of following the guidelines. So that's sort of why I thought maybe the building managers really, when they're doing their handover documentation, do need to take the time and read through some of this stuff. So,
yeah, I just had last week I had client, we got them ISO certified, got them through the process, and they had a really good handover pack. So part of the audit, they were part of the ISO standards, not it's for quality as well. Quality is 9001, is basically releasing the product or services, which is essentially in the building sense handover.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really impressed. It's the best one I've seen. There you go, massive handover pack with all your information, keys as well. Just everything was in one spot, and it was really solid. I was really impressed. So it definitely happens, and those companies that are ISO certified are going to be audited for how they do that handover process as well. So that can give you some sort of comfort.
Mm.
That's why those other companies, especially the larger ones, will definitely ask you for ISO certification before coming onto site.
Yeah, that's good. Compiling a workplace health and safety management plan, and we sort of briefed on this, can be quite daunting for businesses because quite often there isn't, a WIHS expert within the company. And you mentioned in the small businesses there as well. So why is it so important for businesses to implement and update their plans?
Well, it comes back to just your due diligence. Under the Work Health Safety Act, you need to basically keep up to date with health and safety information, especially if you're an officer of the business, which is, draws its line from, I can't remember what it is. I think it's the Financial Act. So you have duties under that act as well to keep up to date with work health safety information, to make sure that you minimise health and safety risks and hazards in the workplace as well. So that's really important to keep those plans up to date to make sure they're relevant. And like you said before, make sure they don't sit on the shelf for ages and become out of date. I come into businesses all the time where they're like, we need help with this, and where's your existing plan or system? And it's just sort of sat on the shelf since the 90s.
Yes. Really blow the dust off.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting to sort of get a bit of a picture of, a snapshot back to the 90s. It's good just to keep up to date on a regular basis. And ways you can do that, you don't necessarily need to engage a work health safety consultant, but there are certain subscriptions that you can sort of get signed up to that give out OHS alerts every week.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is just give you information about, current prosecutions, so you get a bit of an idea of, what the courts are, going after in terms of, those prosecutions, other releases. So, for example, if Safe for New South Wales or, whatever jurisdiction releases a new code of practice, you get a bit of an alert that that's happened. So things like that, you can keep up to date through those subscriptions. It's not a high cost, but it just gives you that other sort of, sense of peace that you're up to date with your health and safety information.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I've subscribed to WorkSafe Victoria.
It's a free service as well.
Oh, absolutely.
They're really good.
They are. And I've attended a number of webinars as well, and just gathering that information. And I can highly recommend anyone listening today is just subscribe to it. You'll come across so many varying stories. I think one of the most important parts there is injuries reported throughout the month. And then you've got, potential lawsuits that are underway or companies that have been sued due to negligence. And really that can just throw the eyes back onto the workplace and go, oh, okay, well, my maintenance guy was up a ladder the other day and no one was standing around him. All right. Well,
you didn't even have a harness. Like,
there you go. 2 meters.
They got prosecuted. There was a fall off the roof. There was no harness. They got prosecuted. Okay, shit. What do I need to do?
Absolutely. So, how can the building manager be better equipped to ensure that they are complying with workplace health and safety themselves?
I mean, I guess in terms of the work health safety laws, it's essentially to, like what I first said, is to engage a work health safety lawyer, perhaps, to sort of get an understanding of your exact responsibilities in your context. But like you said, it can be a little bit confusing. But to make sure you're compliant, I said this before, it's 95% of it's risk management. So implementing some processes in place and perhaps getting some external support, right, perhaps from a consultant if there's, not a resource internally, to create systems in place and basically show people how to manage them. So if you're doing that risk management on a day-to-day basis or for whenever you're engaging a worker, you're going to be pretty much right. But I guess you don't know what you don't know. So, for example, someone's working at heights, what do I need them to do, or how do I need them to be safe?
Yeah.
And to a certain extent, you're relying on their expertise because you're engaging that contractor for their expertise. But part of the pre-valuation process is finding out how they're going to do the work, through, you know, maybe their safe work procedure or swims, and acquiring information that way. So really it's just all about acquiring information, having systems in place to manage safety effectively.
Perfect. Well, James, thank you very much for talking to our audience and myself today on the Building Manager podcast. I really do appreciate your time. I know just how busy you are, so I'm very grateful for that. How can our listeners get in contact with Allen & Hirsch Risk to arrange audits, management plans, ISO certifications and other services?
No worries. You can visit our website, allenhirschrisk.com.au. We have an email address as well, accounts@ahrisk.com.au, which will just go through our general account inbox. You can get in touch with us there, or just either one of those ways you can get in touch. And you know, if you need some sort of assistance, we can see if we can help you.
Fabulous. Or any listeners, come back to me and I'll get you in contact with you guys as well. More than happy to help out there. So again, James, thanks very much. Really do appreciate your time. I wish the company all the best before, well, what's left of 2022 and into the future.
Thanks for that, Matt.
Take care. All the best. Thank you. Bye now. Well, thanks very much, James Allen, for joining me today on the Building Manager podcast, proudly recorded through Anchor by Spotify. James certainly does have a great wealth of knowledge, and I sure hope that you got a lot out of that particular podcast today. Workplace health and safety can be pretty tricky, but sometimes it really just involves quite a deal of common sense. And let's face it, there are some people out there that particularly don't have some of that when they're dealing with workplace health and safety. It starts with the employer and the employer's obligations to pass on workplace health and safety rights and obligations and training to their employees, as well as contractors, and as you heard, PCBUs, or persons conducting business or undertakings. Well, thanks again, James. I really did appreciate your time today on the Building Manager podcast. Should anyone wish to join the Building Manager podcast, feel free to reach out to me, matt@elitebma.com. I'd be more than happy to have that discussion with you. I'm currently conducting training with the ABMA and am looking for people to teach right now. Looking forward to conducting some teaching with the company across in New Zealand, not too far away. So if you have any interest in finding more information out about the ABMA, just visit abma.org.au. Or once again, you can get in contact with me on matt@elitebma.com. I appreciate your time in joining me on this episode of the Building Manager podcast. My name is Matt Osborne and I've been your host. I look forward to making another podcast very soon and getting listeners to join in. Thanks to the building managers out there once again for keeping everyone safe in these high-rise residential complexes and mixed-use buildings. We really do appreciate all of your hard work. Take care. Bye for now. We'll